I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hi, I'm Chanti.
And I'm Lynx, and you're listening to Muses.
Enjoy the show. Hey there, we're Muses and Stuff, a podcast by two Canadian girls who love music so much that we decided to start a show about it. We aim to bring you the stories of the women who were there, who saw, and who conquered. The wives, groupies, girlfriends, muses,
CEOs, A&R execs, photographers, you name it. We are a production of Rock and Roll Archaeology, a network with a variety of shows all rock and roll related. There's something for every rock and roll enthusiast and historians at heart.
Today, we present you with our long-awaited, highly anticipated interview with Pamela Debar, a woman who really needs no introduction, but we'll give you one anyway. This woman is a legend.
Yeah, she is. She is the author of 5 books, and maybe you've heard of her work. How about I'm with the band, Confessions of a Groupie? This woman is such a rock star in her own right that when we were out vintage shopping with her today, she was recognized and called out as rock royalty.
And she really is that. Rock royalty.
Damn right she is.
Pamela first got her start back in the 60s as she was mentored by Frank Zappa. She was in an all-girls experimental band called the GTOs. She's the best-selling author. She is a best-selling author and now writes for PleaseKillMe.com.
Great site. Pamela is one of the rare few that has been there and done that with the biggest rock gods of our time. We're talking Jimmy Page, Mick Jagger, Keith Moon.
Jim Morrison.
The list goes on.
But beyond her sexy, fun-filled life and adventures, Pamela is a shining, guiding light in the world.
Damn right.
She facilitates writing workshops all over the US, Canada, and England, bringing women and people together to unleash their inner muse and tap into their own creativity.
These workshops forge lifelong friendships. Hey, Shanti.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone who has been to one can attest to their life-changing quality.
Speaking of Miss P's writing workshops, it's not too late to catch one if you're in the Nashville or Las Vegas area. If you're listening in real time, you can still catch the second night of the Nashville workshop on November 16th.
Yeah, you can also attend a workshop in Portland on December 14th and 15th and go on the rock tour that Miss P does in LA on December 2nd.
There's also a huge doll convention, so that's all us women and girls who are loyal followers and fans of Miss P in April. So all of the dolls from all over are going to get together in one place.
In Vegas.
Yeah. So stay tuned for details.
Yeah. So here it is, finally.
Yeah, and you can find all this information on Pamela's website, PamelaDeBar.com.
That's right.
Enjoy the interview.
Thanks. All right. So, Miss P.
Yes.
This is such a pleasure.
Well, good. I'm so glad I can finally do this.
Yeah. We really wanted to make sure when we interviewed you, it was in person.
Yeah. I know. I wanted to do it in person.
So, this is...
So, here we are.
Very magical. I figured we'd start with... I guess it's a simple question, but for a lot of people, it seems like a confusing question.
What is a groupie?
Yes.
A groupie is someone... who hangs out with groups. That's where the word came from. It was coined by a British journalist probably in 66, 7. I didn't hear it till 68 when I was hanging out with Zeppelin. And I heard someone call me a groupie. And it wasn't a bad word at that time. It just meant someone who spent time with groups.
Yeah.
It became quickly a pejorative because people are jealous of anyone who gets laid, especially by a rock star.
Yeah.
So,
it's mostly women who are, like, the term applies to, so I guess that automatically makes it, if you're owning your sexuality.
Yes, it usually applies to women, but there are, of course, male groupies.
Mm-hmm.
And groupie doesn't mean you're having sex with them. It just means you want to hang out with them, be with them in whatever capacity works.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of time, I was just the right age and all that to get romantically entangled with a lot of them, but, you know. We also made clothes for them and ironed their clothes and put buttons on their shirts and took them shopping and anything you can do with a friend, really, who's in town. This is mainly the British guys, but mm-hmm. not necessarily only the British guys. It was all the people we hung out with.
Yeah. You know? We talk a lot about that, like the support system and how important that is, especially when people are away from home. There's this quote from Jimi Hendrix. I can't remember the exact quote, but he talks about how like musicians now or then were like sailors back in the day. Like they would come into town, the ladies would, you know, dance with them and, you know, feed them and clean them. And then they go on their way.
Right? Clean them. I like that. Sometimes they need cleaning. Yeah. Definitely that.
That is true. If I can only count how many musicians have showered and my place or
we just take care of them. Well groupies want to give back, you know, in any way we can. That's why we sometimes get romantic with them or even just flings, or but it's so much more than that, you know. I want to sit and talk with them about their music, you know. Any man and women too, but mainly men are more involved in their jobs. You know, women have a lot more other interests. Men's jobs are basically what they live for. So if you understand a man and what a man's doing and get it and want to talk about it, and, you know, they want you around. That's all. And it's sincere. You can't make that shit up.
Yeah. Can't make that shit up. We both look to you as a friend and also as a mentor, which is something that you're familiar with on both sides. So you had a mentor of sorts in both Captain Beefheart and Frank Zappa.
Mm-hmm.
So we definitely want to talk about the GTOs, and especially because tonight we're here for the writing workshop and we're getting girls together.
Mm-hmm.
Usually outrageously.
Outrageously. And so on top of being, you know, a writing workshop facilitator, mentor, author, you started off as like a groupie, but also a performer. Because yes. some people might not know about you that you were a performer and a rock and roll chick in your own right.
Yes, I was.
Fucking wicked.
So, I
was in a dance troupe with a bunch of crazy girls I met on the strip and a fellow, very eccentric fellow's home, a guy named Vito. And he was a Pied Piper of the Sunset Strip back then, an older gentleman who loved to dance. He was a dance teacher. He was a art teacher. And we all, crazy bunch of girls, met at his place, and we hung out on the strip and started dancing with bands together. And we called ourselves the Laurel Canyon Ballet Company, because that's where a lot of us lived. And we danced with Three Dog Night, Love, a bunch of local bands. And they always wanted us on stage. We were half naked, you know, and cavorting around. And at that time, Miss Christine, one of these girls, lived with Zappa. So that's how we met him. And it was quite a thrill, because he was a huge source of entertainment and inspiration for me, because of who he is, or who he was, unfortunately. But, you know, the wildest man in Hollywood. He had recently moved from New York and lived in a log cabin that owned by Tom Mix, this cowboy entertainer in the 20s, a true log cabin right in the middle of Laurel Canyon. And it became the hub of anything cool that was going on. So because Miss Christine was the governess for Moon, who at that moment was 6 months old, we got to hang out up there with him and the family and everybody else who was spending time there. Captain Beefheart, who I already knew, I met when I was in high school because his cousin went to my high school, the Mascara Snake.
The Mascara Snake.
Yeah, that was...
That's such a great nickname.
That's Victor Hayden's, you know, nom de plume. He wrote with Beefheart, of course. They grew up together, but his name's not on any of the songs. He said, oh, no, that's okay. Now, of course, he regrets that.
Yeah.
This is one thing I love about you, is that when you tell a story and the way that you retell it again, and sometimes I've heard it in one way or another, but there's always something that I learn, like, new, that you add on, or a different way of saying it. And that's such a, you know, doing this podcast and realizing how interested people are in rock and roll history, just yeah. how special that is to have that firsthand account, to have lived it. Like,
well, every time I tell it too, I always really try to remember, because I do these rock and roll tours, so I'm telling these stories quite a bit. And yeah, I remember the people hearing this haven't heard it before. Or maybe they have, and I do try to come up with something. Or it just happens automatically, the things I'd never said before. I see it all, you know, and then if I see something, I describe it. So I really do relive it every time I talk about it.
Hmm. I actually just saw an article about Zappa. They're going to do a hologram tour with him.
I've heard that. I have very mixed feelings about those hologram tours.
Yeah.
I'm sure he would too.
I just worked one. I worked Roy Orbison.
Uh-huh.
That was interesting.
Was it? I know Elvis was first, of course, as always. He was the first in that situation.
Roy doesn't really, he's not like a performer where...
He sort of just stands there.
Yeah. So it was a little weird. And I was told that it wasn't even a hologram of Roy, but like a Roy Orbison impersonator.
Oh, that's no good.
Yeah, I would much rather just see an impersonator than like a flat hologram of an impersonator. It was a little strange. The orchestra was great, but...
You might as well have the impersonator there.
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
It's weird. I imagine a Zappa one might be a little more interesting. Because, I mean, he was so fascinating, you'd think they'd want to go kind of all out visually and make it an experience.
Well, he didn't move around a whole lot, really. He stood playing that guitar, he dweedled for like sometimes 40 minutes at a time. So if that's, you know, if he's just going to stand there, it'd probably be a lot easier to deal with.
I don't know.
Yeah. You certainly couldn't get a Zappa impersonator, I can't imagine.
It's interesting, yeah, the hologram thing. Like, how are they capturing these people?
It's going to get better.
Yeah.
It's going to feel like they're right in the room with you eventually, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Half the audience was like super into it. And then the other half, I think, were like, this is new. It's different. It's a little strange.
I will say this about the Frank Zappa hologram. Mm-hmm. Our network interviewed Amit.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say his name right?
Yes, you did.
And he does speak to his father as a hologram. So if anybody is interested to know what his opinion is on that, they can go listen to that episode.
Well, Frank was an absent father a lot of the time. Let's face it. All he cared about really was his work. I know he loved his family, but he really just couldn't wait to get all that stuff out of him. Yeah. You know, some people just innately know they're not going to be with us for a long time. I think he was one of those people.
What was it like being in the studio and actually, you know, recording an album with him?
Well, what happened was he finally decided we should be more than a dance company. And because we were spending a whole lot of time there and just frolicking all around the cabin and all around Laurel Canyon, we kept bringing all these different amazing musicians up to meet him, you know, and he'd become a real integral part of our lives. And he had just started a record label. And we knew all that, but it didn't even enter our mind. Frank created the GTOs. You know, I've got to give him the credit. No one thought about doing a girl band then. There wasn't one.
That's crazy.
Incredible innovator.
Yeah.
Said, you guys should be a group. You know, let's make a record. It was like, really? It was beyond our comprehension. Of course, we jumped on it. And they went on the road, the mothers, as they often did. And he said, write 14 songs. And when I come back, we'll record them. And that's exactly what happened.
That's so amazing. And you guys performed live as well, right?
Yes, we performed. We only did five shows, only two really well-rehearsed ones. The girls were a crazy bunch of girls. And Frank was a teetotaler, and he had no time for drugs. Mm. Most people have no idea that Frank did. Well, now they probably do, but at the time, everybody thought he was high out of his mind, but he didn't take any drugs at all, and he really frowned on it. So the girls scattered all over the place, and before their record was finished, two of them got arrested and thrown in jail, Mercy and Miss Christine. So Frank broke the group up. He said, that's it. And we were so devastated, but Sparky and I especially, because, yes, we got high, but not like the other girls. So eventually he took Sparky and I back into the studio and we did a lot of spoken word with our songs. So we were so far ahead of spoken word because of Frank, you know. We were really performance artists before the term even existed, as usual. He liked to pull things out of people that no one else could get out of people. And you wanted to please him so much that you complied. You wanted to make him laugh. You wanted to make him he used to beat on his knee, like, you know, and that's what you hoped for. If you could get him to laugh his head off and beat his knee, you knew you were doing a good job.
Yeah. It's interesting because it also makes me think of Andy Warhol, where didn't do drugs, like frowned on that, but surrounded himself with these, you know, creative people who he could see, like, this person is special, like they have a spark, they have something to give, and he, you know, found a way to, like, utilize them and make them,
yeah, he,
you know,
used
come alive
them
more.
Too and
yeah.
He pulled stuff out of them like Frank did, but he knew they were stoned.
Oh yeah.
Frank didn't. He was very naive. I used to go over there on downers, you know, one of my favorite drugs of choice, and just kind of flop around there. And I one time I remember he was saying, are you all right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, oh, I'm getting the flu, Frank. Oh, my God. So, yeah, he was a sweet man.
And now breaking our show to tell you about this week's sponsor. Hey, Lynx, have you ever dreamt of marrying a rock star?
Of course.
Well, for all of you out there who finally got your rocker to put a ring on it, let us tell you about Zola.
Zola is the wedding company that will do anything for love, and it's reinventing wedding planning and registry experience to make it the happiest moment in couples' lives even happier. From engagement to wedding and decorating your first home, Zola is there combining passionate customer service with modern tools and technology, all in the service of love.
And didn't some wise men once say that all you need is love?
So true.
Zola is the easiest way to plan your wedding and registry. Join the 500,000 couples who have taken the stress out of planning by using Zola with free wedding websites, your dream wedding registry, affordable save the dates, as well as invitations and easy-to-use planning tools.
Start with a free wedding website. It's so easy and takes just minutes to set up. Zola makes it easy to personalize your favorite design with all of your wedding details and has over 100 beautiful website designs to choose from that fit any couple's style and type of wedding.
Then build your dream registry, which you can put right onto your wedding website so your guests can get all the details they need as well as buy your wedding gift, all in one convenient and beautiful place. The Zola store has the widest selection of gifts with over 500 top brands to choose from, all at different price points. There's something for every guest to give, and they will love the free shipping and returns, price matching, and more. They also have the best completion discount, 20% off remaining gifts on your registry starting right after your big day.
To start your free wedding website and also get $50 off your registry on Zola, go to zola.com/muses.
That's ZOLA.com/muses, or for you Americans, ZOLA.com/muses.
That's right. To start your free wedding website and get 50% off, go to zola.com/muses.
Yeah, I loved him.
Shanti and I both love Laurel Canyon. We talk about going there all the time, and that just seems like such a magical place. Is there any other Laurel Canyon stories or memories that like really are special to you that you really...
Well, you know the Jim Morrison one.
I definitely know the Jim Morrison one.
Oh, yeah. I've read that over and over and over again.
Well, yes, I met Jim Morrison there. I was staying with a friend right above the Canyon store, and I was inhaling this weird stuff at that time called Trimar, which was an inhalant that the Iron Butterflies bassist discovered when he was a janitor in the hospital. And he broke a bottle of it, and he got stoned out of his mind. It wafted up into his nose, and he went, whoa! So he started smuggling it out of the hospital, selling it in little tiny vials for $10 on the strip. But he had a crush on me, so he gave it to me in quart jars.
Wow.
So anytime I can't remember anything, I really do believe it's that stuff. I mean, that was some dangerous stuff. Found out much later it was used for saddle blocks for pregnant women in hospitals. To numb their entire lower half. Yeah. So God knows what it was doing to my brain. Jeez. So I had a bottle of that stuff, and I heard the Doors' first album being played somewhere in the canyon, and it wasn't out yet. Mm-hmm. And I had already been to several of their shows, and I thought, wow, who has that record? I want to meet that person. So I was high enough on this crazy stuff to go down the stairs and follow the Doors' music. And I got to this little greenhouse, and I peeked in the door, and it was Jim Morrison playing his record. And he had no shirt on.
This is like an erotic dream come true.
Leather pants?
And his black leather pants. Yeah.
This keeps getting better.
I can still see it. You know how sometimes stand out in a photograph. I can see that so vividly, and I was high as a kite. It's amazing I can remember. But he was digging around in the refrigerator. It's singing along with The End. So I was high enough. The door was sort of half open, so I walked in and did a backbend. On a rug kind of like this, actually. I just performed a perfect backbend for him on this Trimar stuff. And he stood there and was, get it on. That's what he used to say all the time, get it on. One of the things he would say all the time. And suck my mama was the other thing he said all the time. God knows what it actually meant to him.
The backbend sounds like something I'd do.
And in the backbend, Pam walked in when I was in the back bend, and she looked down at me and said, get the fuck out of my house.
She must have been used to walking in on interesting Probably, situations. Yeah.
Probably. I was only 17. I was an innocent virgin. Not quite innocent, but I was a virgin. So, of course, I skedaddled and went back up to the house where I was visiting, and I heard a bunch of noise downstairs. A lot of crashing, really weird sounds, and her screaming, don't you dare go up there. And I was so excited. He's coming up here, yes. So he came up there. And the problem is I can't remember a lot about that because I was so high. We snorted, I had real cute little hankies I poured it out on. So we were rolling around up there. Like I had other two or three friends up there too. And they don't remember either because we were so high. But we were making out and rolling around, and... And he invited me to the show the next day, the Hullabaloo Club. And that's where I start my rock tours, at the Hullabaloo Club. Yeah.
Can't wait to go on one of those.
Yeah. I know, you have to come.
Have you been on one, LJP?
We got
You've never been to LA.
You all need to come together.
Yeah, we're all
December 2nd is my next one. Oh, but anyway, when I walked down the stairs that next day to go to that gig, I had to step over all these different, all the Doors demos that she had been hurling at his head because he was coming upstairs.
Yeah.
To see
she
what
put up
was,
with a lot.
She put up with a lot, but she was really a fiery, brilliant girl, horribly portrayed in the Doors movie by Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
I don't blame Meg Ryan. It was casting. It was the wrong casting. And misogynistic director.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's not the greatest.
It's a terrible film.
Yeah.
Val Kilmer was great, though. He really was. He personified him pretty well, I thought.
Hmm. And then, yeah, that is so fantastic. You've had so many wild and wonderful relationships with so many different people. And Lynx and I have two episodes on you already. So this, it's such an honor to be talking to you in person because we've done episodes about you. And if people don't know, because it's so obvious, the whole podcast is inspired by you.
Oh,
because
thank
of you. This podcast
that
exists.
Is so wonderful, honey. Yeah.
And
we met because of you.
Yes,
well.
I know that. I mean, I know that's important.
It's crazy.
For sure. I mean, that couldn't have happened otherwise.
So the two episodes, one was focusing on you more specifically, and then the other one was just on your relationship with Michael Dibar.
Uh-huh. I saw that you did that. That is so cool.
And it's so wonderful that you have these long-term, you know, friendships and relationships, and you have said, stay friends with your exes, dolls, mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. like that.
If you can, if they haven't been evil to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even then, you can overcome that because, you know, I mean, I just turned 70 and, you know, I've realized so many things in my life. We are all one, you know. People fuck up and mess up and do dumb things, but we're all really connected. And if you remember that, you can forgive people. And hopefully they change enough if they've been evil to you that you can at least forgive them and accept who they are. Whether you can hang out with them or not, I don't know. But I haven't had too much evil in my life, so I'm friends with a whole lot of my exes. I'm even friends with Bobby Martini.
Aww.
My high school boyfriend. I just talked to him 3 days ago. He lives in Vegas. Whenever I go there to teach, I see him. It's amazing. I said that, I mean, he was 15 and I was 16 when we got together. Pretty incredible. And Nick St. Nicholas, my first lover too, very friendly with him. Most of them, you know, most of them, some of the Brits. I haven't seen Mick Jagger in forever, ever since Bianca answered the phone. And same with Jimmy Page. I don't see him. No one sees Jimmy Page except his 17-year-old girlfriend. Actually, she's 27, right?
Yeah.
She's 27.
Yeah, Jimmy Page. And but he did a thing with Jack White and Jack White and
oh, that movie.
Someone else. But other than that, yeah, we haven't seen too much of him.
No, it's great. It might get loud. Fantastic movie.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch. And organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for craveable, hand-battered, cooked-to-order chicken fingers.
Chicken up.
Crispy, crinkle-cut fries.
Hot potato coming through.
Buttery Texas toast.
Toast walking.
And secret Cane's sauce.
Topping off now.
Turbocharge your chicken fingers and get them even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app.
Go, go, go!
Raising Cane's chicken fingers. One love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Yeah, so you've had these, you know, I can sit here forever and ask you, what were Mick Jagger's lips like? And what did Jimmy Page's hair smell like? And it's all in your books, which is fantastic. So people who are listening can check out your five books that
you've written.
They're all on Amazon. Get them signed, all on Amazon.
And I've read them all for Audible, too.
Which I highly recommend.
Except for Rock Bottom. You can get that only on Kindle now. Or if you can find a hardback cover.
I've got one.
I see you have one. It's pretty rare right now. That was my third book.
Like the first thing I look for every time I go into a used bookstore.
Me too. Yeah. I need them. I only have one copy myself.
That book is amazing too. It's different from most of your others. You're really, you know, every chapter is focused on a different artist.
And well, the Let's Spend the Night Together is too.
That's true.
On the different groupies. But I am in a lot of these stories in Rock Bottom because I knew so many of the people I wrote about.
Yeah.
So they're sort of autobiographical in a way, and then I insert myself into a lot of the stories,
well,
so to speak.
Going back to your first book, I'm with a Band, when I look back at my old diaries, I get this mixture of like hilariousness and like extreme embarrassment.
Me too.
I were you ever nervous to like put all of that out there when you were first writing it?
No, I was not nervous at all. I thought, you know, almost any teenage girl from any era will understand where I'm coming from with
these
things.
It's the most relatable
thing. Yeah, because all teenage girls feel the same way, whether they're with, I don't know, Captain Beefheart or the captain of the football team. Right?
It's same true. Yeah.
So it's the same feelings.
Yeah.
And any music lover, all my early Elvis feelings and Dion and the Beatles and all those things, you know, any music lover who, why would they pick up on with the Band otherwise, relates to that completely about it. Maybe it was Rick Springfield or the New Kids on the Block or whatever.
I feel like that's what makes it so special, because it makes you feel everything else, because you're like, yes, I've been there.
Yeah.
Like, I've felt these things before. And that book is so good.
Oh, thank you.
I think we both kind of reread every couple of years. It's just so easy to pick up, and you really feel it. What did you always know that you were going to use?
Yes.
Yeah.
I always knew, well, I knew I was living through a time that, you know, people would want to know about later. I was prescient enough to know when I was standing on stage with the Stones or the Doors or the Who or whoever it was, that people would want to know what that was like.
Yeah.
I knew that. I knew that the scenes the love-ins, and all the crazy things, even when there were thousands of kids on the Strip, with the Sunset Strip riots, all those things, I knew they were important and people would want to hear about it.
And this is another reason why like groupies are so important. Like we are also historians. Like, we're there. Yes. We're living it.
Yes.
We can tell it from a different point of view.
A woman's point of view, usually.
Exactly.
So important.
Yeah.
There's still a dearth of, you know, rock chicks. Let's face it. It's still a man's world out there. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness there are more, but nowhere near enough.
Yeah.
Groupies are part of that world. That's, especially back then when we really didn't have much of an option to rock ourselves, you know, we were in the thick of it when these bands, you know, the Renaissance of rock, you know, I often equate it to, you know, Florence when Michelangelo was fucking around there.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's that important.
Yeah. There's no question. It was a very magical period in music history. It was so special.
Dylan, he's a cross between Mozart and Shakespeare. And in 100, 500 years, people are still going to be quoting him, talking about him. And to be in his presence, I've known it from 65 was the first time I saw him. Wow. I walked down, I was sitting in my seat, and everyone's very quiet. And I looked around and said, what's wrong with these people? And I got up and walked to the front of the stage. I was the only person who did it. And I leaned on it like this, and no one stopped me. I took pictures. I had a photography class. I still have some of those pictures. That's when he wore his herringbone suit, you know. And at that moment, I said, I am in the presence of greatness that will never die. And I've known that from every time he plays in L.A. I never miss him. I sometimes travel. I've traveled to Nashville to see him, New York, over and over again. And I know that it's an honor to be there. Huge, huge honor. And when people, sometimes I'd be walking out of the gig in some sort of bliss, and people have the fucking nerve to grumble about his voice.
That's crazy.
They don't realize how they were in his presence and how important that is.
Yeah, I saw him recently and so did Shanti, and I thought he sounded great.
Why, my experience was that I didn't see him in Toronto. I traveled to Oshawa to go see him.
Uh-huh.
And at the end of the concert, I walked up to the stage and nobody stopped me.
Oh, good.
And
so you got close to him. He still looks pretty darn good.
Yeah. So I'd found a four leaf clover before the show. So I knew that it was my time.
I'm glad you guys saw him. And you know, he has said in interviews that, you know, I am an old blues man now. That's what I sound like. And if people go to his gigs thinking he's going to sound like Blowing in the Wind or like a Rolling Stone, the man is pushing 80, so it's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what do you expect?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, I've got to say, though, I saw Dion recently. You know, I never give up on my gods. Never. Dion, after Elvis, was the most important rock star to me, you know, in my pubescence. And you know how important that is. So I just saw him and I went all the way to New Jersey to see him. It was so great. Fifth row center, you know, couldn't wait to see him. And he sings just like he used to.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
He does Run Around Sue and The Wanderer and my favorite ones, all my Dion hits in my heart, you know, and he sounds exactly like he used to. And he looks amazing. And he is going to be 80 next year.
Wow. He must be doing some...
Well, he's a Christian and he's a long time...
Different lifestyle.
Clean. Yeah. So really, it really does make a difference, I think.
Yeah.
Same with my ex-husband, Michael. He's playing on the 30th and he sounds just like he did in Silverhead. He's 37, 38 years sober.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with it.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other, when you look back, favorite concert moments that really stand out to you?
Oh, honey, there's so many.
I know.
There's way too many.
I just want to hear
that too. Well, there was, you know, I was in the Doors audience so many times. And when he would just go wild. He'd lay on the floor and sing, you know, and roll around and moan. And I mean, no one had done that shit. I mean, I assume there were a lot of old blues guys who did, but I'd never seen them. So to me, that was something new. When they lay down on the floor and sang that way. And so sexy, the growling and just crawling around on the floor. And oh my God. Unbelievable. And it was like he was going to eat the microphone.
One of my favorite stories is when you're sitting on Jimmy Page's amp.
Everyone comments on that. Like, I guess it's pretty rare. I don't
know. It is. It's no man's land. Well, you did it.
I'm going to have that in the movie for sure. That just the angst, just being up that high on the stage with them and seeing it was, I think I must have written about it and I'm with the band, how incredible that was to get their perspective.
The bracelets on your arm, by one, like that's,
I know that's iconic stuff, right?
It totally is.
They would come when they would walk, they had a phase in 69 when they all went to, I guess it was New Mexico or somewhere, and they got all those Indian bracelets, those big, chunky. You know, they tried to outdo each other with the gaudiness of these big silver and turquoise bracelets. And one by one, they put them on my wrist. They went all the way down to my elbow as they walked on stage to play. That's some pretty amazing shit. Yeah,
it is.
Keep them safe for them.
Yeah, I know. And then I got to wear them that whole 2 hours.
You were wearing things. You were like an amazing gift giver. And you actually would make beautiful clothing for a lot of these guys.
Yeah, it started with Chris Hillman because I was so in love with him and I wanted to show him, you know, I had to, you know, that's part of being a groupie is giving back as however you can, whether you're Sweet Connie, you know, and entertaining the Who in a certain way backstage or making shirts for him or whatever. It's giving back. And I wanted to clothe him. I mean, it was like an embrace, right? So I made him the first shirt, then I made him another one. And at that time, I had already gotten real close with Graham Parsons, who was the singer in the Burrito Brothers, Chris's band. And so I made him a purple shirt, and I would embroider their initials and flowers and things. They were cowboy snap shirts is what I was making back then.
They were very detailed.
Yeah, really detailed. And one of my most important precious objects is Graham's purple shirt because his wife Gretchen, she was soon to be his ex, but they were still married when he passed. She gave me the shirt and she said he treasured it and kept it in a plastic holder, and I was just so touched. I that's one of the only times I burst out into tears without knowing the tears were even going to come. Aww. By seeing that shirt again.
Yeah,
because the only last time I'd seen it was on him on stage. You know, so I have that, which I will be giving to Polly Parsons, you know, one of these days when I'm gone. I'm bequeathing it to her, of course. Aww. And I have another one of his shirts that Marty Stewart gave me when he read I'm with the band. And he just said he was so moved. He got to see who Graham was. And he found out my address. I didn't even know Marty Stewart at the time. Found my address and called me. I got my phone number from Randy St. Nicholas, a photographer that we both knew. And he came over and gave me one of Graham's nudie shirts. So I have two of Graham's shirts. And I share them on my rock tours with people. I get so mad at these people if they've never heard of him. Oh, I give them such an upbraiding.
Good.
And I demand that they listen to him.
Yeah.
Good. Good.
And a lot of them thank me later. I've had many of my fan letters say thank you so much for turning me on to Graham Parsons. And I promised him right after he died that I would do that, that I would keep your music alive. And I really feel like I've done that.
I think so too. You mentioned rock gods, and I know, or I believe that I've read that you've mentioned, you know, being close to rock stars is like being close to divinity. So I've always been curious to know more about when you said Mary was the first groupie.
Magdalene, yeah.
And if you could elaborate that on that a little bit, I'd love to know more. I know you took a trip to Jerusalem, mm-hmm. and that you're very spiritual and, can we say, religious?
Yeah, I guess so. It stems from religion, which has turned into spirituality. But yeah, I was born again when I was 8 years old, and I have Jesus tattooed on my back, and I have my own relationship with him. It has nothing to do with being born again anymore. There's a whole other reality to the idea of being born again. It's really being born again to yourself, the true you, the higher soul, higher spirit in your, in every, all of us, right? But, and that's what he was trying to get across to people. It was stolen by the church. But Magdalene, yes. And the reason I said that divinity is because great art or great brilliance, you know, taps into your brilliance, to our own brilliance and spirituality and all that. So in that way, yeah, she was the first groupie. She followed him around and then they became very connected. I mean, it makes sense to me. And he was saying some pretty amazing things, you know, way before a lot of other people thought of it. The Buddha had already said a few of these things. Yep. All the great masters say the same thing. We are him. We are them. We are it. We are everything. So when people realize that we're not separate from each other, then things can change. I think right now what's going on in the world with Trump especially, it's pointing out the disparity, the opposite of the truth. And sometimes we have to see that before it can swing back to the other side. At least that's what I'm hoping.
Yes. That's like a nice positive way to get the disaster that's happening.
Yes. I tend to think that way.
Do you think that when you leave those shirts to Polly Parsons and you're no longer here on this realm, that Elvis and George Harrison and Graham will be welcoming you?
I don't really know. I believe there's, we're all the same. I think what we realize when we go is, yes, I will be united with them, but I will also be united with the spirit of the universe. I think it's all one, and I think that's what happens ultimately. But I hear from them. Also, we can be separate spirits. I think we can do whatever we want once we're out of here. And I do connect with them, especially Graham, on another level there.
When we were in Memphis, there were these moments. We went to Graceland a couple months ago, mm-hmm. and everything, like, was magical on that trip, and everything was working out for us. We got to record at Sun Studio, which was crazy. And
yeah, that's fabulous.
Right?
I went to, of course, all those places.
Yeah, it was magic.
To get invited after hours to go back
and record.
Studio. Yeah, it was so cool.
It was so great.
We felt a connection with Elvis.
Of course. Yeah. You got to stand in that spot and hold the microphone and, yeah. Right?
We were like, Elvis is definitely here.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. Making sure.
I think if we call to people who passed on they're already now then the all and everywhere. And I think if it's a joyous connection, they show up.
I think the last time I heard about you writing, you were saying you are going to be writing a book about your spirituality. And
yes, my next book is, my sixth book is called Blinded by the Light.
Great title.
Nice.
I'm a serious Springsteen nut too, of course. And the subtitle is Sex, God, and Rock and Roll. So amazing. It's about my spiritual journey that was right alongside and woven within my rock and roll journey.
Are you still writing this right now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm going to be writing it for a while. It won't be out till probably next Christmas time. But I have a column. Yeah. You know, I have a column right now.
Yes.
PleaseKillMe.com. Amazing website anyway. Amazing book.
Legs McNeil's awesome.
Legs McNeil and Jillian.
Yeah, both of them are great. Yeah.
I have a monthly column there now. I'm doing my sixth one now on the struts.
Awesome.
And it's my first rock interview in a very long time because I just haven't wanted to interview anyone.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask you about that. People might not know, but you were like a journalist for a long time. You worked for many magazines and interviewed many musicians.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorites was Iggy Pop. We did the cover of Details. And Ray Davies, another one of my favorites. And surprisingly, one of the most fun interviews I did was with Tommy Lee.
Nice. Fun guys.
Fun.
Yeah.
Fun. What goofball.
Yeah.
But sweet. Really great.
You interviewed Michael Hutchence too, right?
Yeah. My first big rock star interview was Michael Hutchence. And he made it so easy. And we connected so amazingly. And I thought, wow, this is going to be fun interviewing these people.
Yeah.
And it was. So I went from being a groupie. I mean, I'm always a groupie. But, you know, I've turned it into a professional mm-hmm. situation. So that worked out really well for me.
See, we're following your lead.
Yes. And now it's a brand new world doing this kind of thing because it got to where, you know, people were writing for free. So I can't do that. I have to pay my bills and everything. So I stopped journalism. Yeah. That's when I started teaching and, you know, that kind of stuff. Rock tours.
Thank goodness you did start teaching, because what a gift you've given to so many people, and like what a shining light you've been to so many women that you've been able to affect their lives positively. When did you get the idea to start doing the writing workshops?
In between my books, I would brush up by taking creative writing classes, you know. And at one of them, I went, Moon Zappa, a lifelong friend, told me about a writing teacher she liked in the Valley. And I went out there and sat through one class and did the exercises. And halfway through it, I said, I should be doing this. I could be doing this. This would be a cool thing to do. So it took a while to actually get the courage, because I was always a fearful public speaker, believe it or not. So I just finally, you know, the writing had dried up. You know, I was making $5,000 an article for like Cosmo and stuff. So that was all gone. And I started my first class in L.A. MySpace was how I advertised then. You're probably too young.
No, we remember MySpace. Yeah. We loved MySpace.
We definitely remember MySpace.
We messaged bands over MySpace.
Okay. Yeah, I got a lot of backstage passes.
Through MySpace? Yes. Now it's Instagram, isn't it? Yeah. All my young groupies meet the bands through Instagram. But yeah, they came. The girls came to the door, and I taught a class. And that's almost 20 years now. That's amazing, crazy. Right? And then I started, the next place I started teaching now is 12 years ago, is Austin, because my goddaughter moved there. And I just thought it was a perfect place to try another one. Then it was New York and Chicago and New Orleans and Vegas and Portland, Seattle, London now, and Toronto.
Yeah.
So, and other cities too. I can't remember them all right now, but I travel a lot teaching.
Yeah.
And I love it. And it's become my most favorite thing to do. I meet people like you guys and I fall instantly in love with all my girls. Like, I'm madly in love with you all. Aww. You know that.
Feelings mutual.
It's true, though. And it's like, oh, I love them. Oh, it's a feeling I haven't ever had, you know, sharing this kind of, because I don't know what it is about my energy, but people are safe in the room with me, and they tell stories and write about people and experiences that they've never told anyone sometimes, and certainly never thought about it the way it comes out on the page. And it's very, it's very cathartic.
It is like therapy.
Yeah. Well, you know, I call it groupie therapy.
It totally is. You're laughing, you're crying. Like, you go through every emotion in like a couple hours.
And everyone listens to each other and they learn from each other's experiences.
And they all get to love each other too.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of times it's lifelong friendships, but even if it's for those 2-3 hours, it's like this incredible connection that really can't be broken and really can't be explained. So it would be great if more people signed up for my classes.
Yeah.
PamelaDeBar.com.
And I guess you like hearing from people trying to tell you, like, come to this city.
Yes. Here. And then I always say, and I've got a couple cities pending right now, because I say, okay, if you really want this in your city, get me 15 women who want to come.
Yeah.
So I do have a couple city girls who contact me in that way, trying to make that happen.
Yeah.
Right now.
I want to encourage anyone who's listening to that, because that's what I did. I wrote you. And it's like, let's do this.
You did.
Yeah.
I never forget coming here the first time and you had that sign up.
Oh, yeah.
With Allison. You guys were so cute standing there with that sign.
Yeah, we made a little Miss P sign. Picture up at the airport. We were so nervous and excited. Like, oh, my God. We were like, it was like meeting the biggest rock star in the world.
Exactly. Because the groupie has groupies. Yeah. And I remember the first time I met you and how nervous I was. And I can't wait for some new girls to come in tonight and be so nervous.
New girls, there's one girl coming in.
Oh, I was just, no. No, I said I'm excited to see these new girls, and sometimes they all, you know, one or two of them is pretty nervous and they get all flabbergasted, but then they calm down and actually write, and they're amazed at what happens. So I'm looking forward to it as always.
Well, Lynx, is there anything else that we haven't covered? Or LJP, you got any questions over there?
Well, I wanted to just ask, well, first of all, I want to make sure people know about, if they're in LA or going to LA, check out your website, because that rock and roll tour is amazing. It sounds incredible. Like, that's definitely the first thing we're going to do when we get there. And you mentioned earlier a possible movie of I'm With a Band. So is there anything you can say about that?
Well, I can say that I've been in more meetings, you know, I've had this thing optioned a dozen times, and no one has had the balls or ovaries to actually go through with it. But I believe I finally met the right people who will. The timing's right with the Me Too thing, because, you know, I was a woman who did everything I wanted to do against all odds, and you know, I'm still called all kinds of names because of what I did. And I think the time is right to tell that story. And the people I'm working with now believe it too. So I think it's going to be a series.
Even better.
Because we can tell many more of the stories. I wrote a film script and it's good, but I had to squish people together and combine Nick St. Nicholas and Chris Hillman and stuff like that. And was like, it was difficult. And leave certain people out. I didn't want to leave out. Yes, how do you leave parts of your life out? So I won't have to if it's a series.
It'd be cool if it was a Netflix original series. And imagine there's like a concert scene. We should sneak in all the dolls. Yeah. And they should be the ones rocking out.
I agree. We'll be the groupies at the front of the stage.
So buy Miss P's books, every single one of them. All five of them, go to a writing workshop, go on a tour of Laurel Canyon, go on the rock tour if you can, because it is a dream of mine and it's on my vision board and I'm going. And I think we're all a good proof that dreams come true. You're a dream come true. How are you so beautiful? I love you. Goodbye.
I love you too. I love you all. And please visit my website at PamelaDeBar.com. And follow me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. How's that?
Perfect.
I'm doing pretty well with my social media,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Mwah.
All right, let's get writing.
Yeah.
So that was our interview with the legendary Pamela DeBar.
She's an incredible woman, and just being around her and her energy, so invigorating. These classes are amazing. Highly encourage anyone who can go to one to do so. Also, again, check out her rock tour and stay tuned for details on the doll convention in April.
Absolutely. We'd love to see you all there. It's been such a beautiful process meeting listeners of the show and fans of Pamela all together, because we, as Pamela said, are all one.
Yes,
we really are.
And make sure to check out Rock and Roll Archaeology. So many more amazing podcasts. Just can't get enough of them. So.
And yeah, check out Pamela's writing on pleasekillme.com, as well as a bunch of other great stuff on there too.
Yeah, and her site, PamelaDeBar.com.
Yeah, and thanks for listening. As always, you can come and visit us on our social medias, Instagram, Facebook, Muses and Stuff Podcast. Bye.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger. for some truths are best left unknown.